out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
And welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 21st of February, 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at radioarian.com today because we have Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson with us from rustjournal.org and the Orthodox Nationalist. Matt, how are you doing today?
You know, for once, I'm not doing half bad. Not half bad at all.
That's good to hear. So am I. It's an absolutely glorious day here in the Sceptred Isle, and I've been driving around in my car with lots of loud music playing from Eternal Reich's Audio Insurgency, and nothing beats it on a beautiful day, I find, driving around with loud music. And we also got positive news to talk about today as well. We're going to be getting into Putin's State of the Nation speech, but just before we get into that, somebody sent in an article which was claiming that Putin had been clamping down on the far right in Russia. And I know that you have covered this before in one of your podcasts, but could you just give a brief comment on that before we get into Putin's speech, do you think?
Yeah, it's real simple. There's no constitutional authority to clamp down on any political group in the country unless it's involved in criminal acts. And that's what these groups are doing. Either they're usually some sort of violence, terrorism, or currency, you know, shipping currency out of the country, which has been a problem for some of these groups in the past. You know, you can't get in any trouble unless you're engaged in criminality. And that goes for any political group anywhere. This is that right is his base. He has absolutely no interest in oppressing them. But remember, these are local court decisions that he has no control over. This is all, you know, this is at the local court level. So, you know, I don't know who's doing this. It may be legitimate. I don't know what, but it certainly doesn't come from the federal level.
Well, I did also notice that they had Navalny there was speaking with them. And we know that Navalny is funded by America. So it looks like these groups were funded by the West anyway that he clamped down on. So they were subversive, probably like the Ukrainian ones, which are also being funded by the West. So I don't think we should pay too much attention to that. I mean, and if you just look at this speech that he's just given, his State of the Nation speech, I mean, it's full of nationalist policies. I mean, it is civic nationalism, yes, but you can tell that this is a nationalist country. I believe the speech went on for a couple of hours. I don't think he took any questions. It was just a long speech that he gave, and it's the equivalent of Donald Trump's State of the Nation speech, which we were all very, very disappointed by this year. And the main thing that really impressed me about what Putin had to say was what he had to say about the family. And this was very similar to Viktor Orban, who has just also brought in lots of new policies to help Hungarians produce more white children. And obviously, this is something that is very important to Putin, because it was the very first thing that he spoke about. And I've got a direct quote here from him. He said, "Russia has entered an extremely challenging period in terms of demographics. As you know, the birth rate is declining. As I have already said, this is caused by purely objective reasons, which have to do with the immense human losses and birth dearth experienced by our country in the 20th century during the Great Patriotic War and the dramatic years following the dissolution of the Soviet Union. This does not mean, however, that we must accept this situation or come to terms with it. Definitely not. We succeeded in overcoming the negative demographic trends in the early 2000s when our country faced extreme challenges. This seemed to be an impossible challenge at the time. Nevertheless, we succeeded, and I strongly believe that we can do it again by returning to natural population growth by late 2023, early 2024. And then he brought out what he was going to be doing to encourage this. And he's removing tax entirely for very large families. Based on house space, you're going to get less tax that you have to pay based on how large your house is. He's doubling disability benefits. And bear in mind, over here in the West, they keep taking the disability benefits away. He's actually going to be doubling them. And he's going to be paying a part of the mortgage for each child. That's the same that Viktor Orban has done. I think it was four children, and then you get the whole house paid for in Hungary, which is the same as Adolf Hitler did under National Socialism. And then he says, and finally he said, let us see what we have. If we add this sum to the maternity capital, which can also be used for mortgage payments, we will get over 900,000 rubles that mothers could get. In many regions, this is a substantial part of the cost of a flat. So rather than doing what the West is doing, which is replacing the few white people that we have left with Negroes and non-whites, Putin wants to get the birth rate going. He wants to increase the natural births of the Russian people. This is fantastic, Matt. What do you think about this?
Well, this has been a priority since 2000. The collapse of the Russian economy in the 90s collapsed the birth rate. And even the life expectancy in the 90s went down. So this was a huge priority. Putin's popularity is based on two things. The first, of course, is a massive economic recovery in the first 10 years of his rule. And then the second thing, of course, is this kind of nationalism and Eurasianism. So he couldn't, you know, this is a core of his support. This is the largest program of its kind. It is so comprehensive and so huge. And keep in mind also that the cost of living in Russia is far less than in the United States. It's about 50% the cost of living as in the United States. Rents are about 70% lower even in big cities than in the United States. And I'm assuming most of Western Europe. You know, a loaf of bread is 47 cents. All your utilities for your two-bedroom apartment in Moscow, all utilities monthly put together is the American the ruble equivalent of $104. So it's just a more rational system, and it comes from a strong state and a growing economy. The other thing that Putin said, which shows why he can do this, is that Russian reserves, you know, Russia has no debt. Every country has short-term debt, but that's meaningless. That gets paid off every year. There's no long-term debt at all, and of course, a huge trade surplus. So their reserves, both gold and currency, are so massive that he said that not only, you know, short-term debt can get paid off every year with no problem, but all private debt could be theoretically paid off every year too. In America, of course, you have about $15 trillion each for the federal debt, and then private sector debt, or now $17 trillion for both. Absolutely unrepayable. So Russia can afford to do this. And this exists entirely because of Putin's policies since 2000 and 2001. We talked about Poland on this show. I did an entire show on it myself, similar to the Hungary situation, because they're doing so well only through National Socialist policies. That's what these are. It's identical everywhere. That now they're increasing benefits. I said in the Polish case, they've increased the retirement age. I think it was 66 at one point. He increased it to 70. And this is happening. Decreasing it. I'm sorry, in the other direction. In France, it's almost 70 now. But Poland decreased. It used to be 66. Now it's some low 60s. I'm sorry about that. In France, that's what it's going to do. They pushed it to almost 70 or maybe over 70 now, which caused riots maybe about 10 years ago. So this is what happens when you have a rational economy. They have more cash, they know what to do with, and they could finance all of this. And the West couldn't do this no matter what. And so you have retirement ages going through the roof because they can't afford to pay these pensions. And all of this investment is because of these rational policies that have flooded the country with reserves, both a massive amount of gold as well as currency itself. It's really an incredible victory.
Yes, you spoke about that later on. I think the one thing that you could say that it maybe could be a bit better is if he spoke about the effect that feminism has had on the birth rates. He's talking about there about the loss after the war, about the loss after communism, but feminism has played a huge role in this as well. But quite clearly, at least he's fighting back against that. And he says by 2024, they will be back up to what they should be, which is, I think it's 2.2 children. And in the rest of the West, it's between 1.2 and 1.7 that we're having. And this is the main challenge that you know, all white nations should be talking about, is getting our birth rate back up. And so far, it's only Russia, Hungary, Poland, and now Italy that are talking about it.
I've offered to Putin, I've written him more than one letter offering myself to go over there and make as many babies as he needs for some of these women over there. I've yet to hear from him. But, you know, we should volunteer our time to go over there just for the sake of justice and to, you know, make more babies. I'm certainly willing to volunteer for that.
Well, it would certainly be interesting to see what the place is like. I know you would really benefit from going over there. Perhaps some of your listeners might get it together to afford to pay for you to go over there one day, Matt, on a fact-finding trip. But you mentioned the finances there and the economy, and he's also been talking about encouraging small businesses. He said the state provides financial resources to families to run a household farm or to start a small business. And by the way, these are substantial resources of tens of thousands of rubles. Let me emphasize that support programs will be tailored to meet the needs of every specific applicant. Additional legal guarantees are needed to protect people. I propose introducing mortgage payment holidays, as we have recently discussed in Kazan, to enable people who lose their income to suspend their mortgage payments. They must get a chance to keep their home if it is the only property they own, and postpone the loan payments. And that's against the banks, basically. That's saying, well, the banks should not be taking homes off people that have lost their jobs. They should be suspending the mortgage payments. And he's saying there that they want more farms and they want more businesses. And he talked about that a little bit more later on. So what do you think about what he said about the banks here, Matt, about postponing these loan payments?
Again, this is a long-term policy. Did you just ignore the fact that I said that I wanted to go over there and make more babies for the Russian people? Did you just totally ignore that?
No. I suggested listeners might like to club together to pay your fees to go over there.
Okay. I thought maybe you missed it. But,
do you want me to remind them?
I'm like 25% kidding. Anyway, this has been a long-term policy here. Since Putin nationalized the central bank and the banks have come from it to a great extent. I mean, there are certainly plenty of private banks out there, although the state-run banks, or state-controlled banks, I should say, do better. He could make this a reality. Interest payments are lower. Construction costs are lower. Home prices are lower. And now they're going to be subsidized on top of that. I guess what he's offering is a mortgage holiday, where he'll tell the banks you're not going to collect until X, Y, and Z happens if you have a health problem or if you're laid off or something like that. There is a labor shortage in Russia in certain areas, which is something that I don't think Americans have ever experienced. Maybe during World War II was the last time. So wages are going to continue to go up. And he's also aware that immigration from the third world, which in the Far East is a problem, although at least there it's a relatively high IQ Chinese, but there are plenty of illegal immigrants coming from the southern part of the country that the Russians are struggling to get a hold of. They're far more rational about throwing them out. They don't have any kind of liberal, you know, people demanding that they stay. And citizenship is difficult to get precisely because of these kinds of benefits. So white people are going to be benefiting from this far more than any other group of people. You know, it's a multi-ethnic state, especially when you consider that the minorities would be Armenians, Ukrainians, Belarusians, Latvians, etc. So, you know, he's talking mostly about white people when he's talking about this multi-ethnic nature of the country. So let's be very careful there. He's not talking about, you know, people from Zaire. So, but this is a key element. He wants to make it very difficult, especially for a young family, to lose their home when it comes to things that, you know, events that are not their fault, which would be impossible to do in America. Banks are so powerful, they rule the state directly because of all the debt and how powerful they are and how they finance candidates. There's no way you could tell them what to do. And I always laugh when, remember when Bernie Sanders was talking about breaking up the banks. And I said, with what? What, you know, the U.S. is dependent on these banks. There is no way that the U.S. government would ever attack the very institutions that permit the federal government to function in the first place. It's just a laughable thing. It's just pure campaign rhetoric. It could actually be done. And when Putin says, you know, this is my suggestion, as you know, in the past, it means you better do it. And these things are just going to continue to make him more popular. And if businesses and banks refuse to go along, he has a tendency to show up to these places personally, and they run like cockroaches, and it'll get done. And the more he does that, again, the more popular he's going to get. But this is win-win for everybody.
Well, wouldn't it have been amazing if we'd actually heard Donald Trump talking about things like this, about setting up farms for young families and paying off mortgages and doing all we could to increase the birth of white Americans. And clearly immigration isn't a problem, because there was no actual mention of anything to do with immigration in the whole speech. You know, there was nothing about, well, we've got so many jobs now, we need to bring in foreigners to do them. It was, we need to create more jobs for our people. We need to keep expanding. Next, he spoke about the environment. He said, yes, we have probably neglected the waste disposal problems for maybe 100 years, which means we have never paid attention to them. Many landfills are overfilled because waste has been accumulating there for decades. The landfills have turned into real mountains of garbage near residential areas, and he's going to clean all that up. He says, by the way, I am also interested to know how you issued permits for the construction of residential neighbourhoods next to these dumps and landfills. Did you not think of that? You should have. I urge the representatives of the authorities at all levels. Pretending that nothing is happening, turning away, brushing aside people's needs is absolutely unacceptable. These issues are difficult, of course, but difficult issues must also be addressed. Now, I can't imagine Donald Trump, you know, addressing the infrastructure and the people building the infrastructure in America like that, and saying, how dare you do this? How dare you build these towns on these landfills? And how dare you allow these landfills to actually appear? I know you've got all these problems over there with the water being poisoned in places like Michigan, Matt, and Donald Trump never speaks about it. And here's Putin speaking directly about the poison that's in the environment. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, as I've said from the very beginning, right when he took over in 2000, he doesn't need private sector money. Because he comes from the security services, because his popularity is so high, he just doesn't need their assistance. You know, people from the army or security services have their own sources of funding. You know, they don't need it. And I was so disappointed with Trump because he didn't take money. He financed his own campaign. So I said, okay, he won't be beholden to anybody. So he could do things like that. But the left, and even most Republicans, have made it impossible for this guy to govern. He can't do anything without a flurry of media assault and hatred and threats of assassination and threats of military coups, which I couldn't believe during the campaign. Although I can't imagine a military coup in favor of Hillary, although Obama did purge the upper ranks of the Pentagon for being too conservative, he retired a lot of generals and admirals and even colonels. So, but because they've made it impossible for Trump to govern, he can't say things like this, despite the fact he doesn't really owe anybody anything, and essentially ran as an independent. But Russia, one thing that Russia has is room. So there's no excuse for having these landfills. And when he uses this kind of almost sarcastic rhetoric, you know, I'm just wondering how you issue permits here. He's going to take action and direct action. Russian anti-corruption laws are the strictest in the world. And he's sending more and more people to jail for corruption. It's very difficult to get away with this stuff anymore. And the stronger Russia gets, the more reserves it has, the more money it has to work with, the harder it's going to be to function like the old oligarchs used to function. Again, that's the root of his popularity. The West has no money to work with this kind of thing. I mean, it's got plenty of money for military adventures abroad. But as we said before, even there, you know, the military is in bad shape. But Russia has a rational governing system and a man who's proven himself over and over again. And the very fact that this is a part of his popularity, he's never going to deviate from this. And Russians have said over and over again that if he has to violate the Constitution to run for more and more terms, they'll vote for him. They care about results. They don't care about procedures. So the one thing, the Soviet Union has the worst environmental record in the history of industrialization. They destroyed rivers. They destroyed whole areas of the country, areas that will take decades to be cleaned up. And this is another Soviet legacy that he has to deal with. And now the money is there.
Well, cleaning it up is again, it's a nationalist policy. Nationalism is all about blood and soil. And we've heard about the blood. We've now heard about the soil. And now we hear about culture and education. He said, we must work consistently to strengthen the common environment of education and culture. The culture and education centers in Kaliningrad, Kemerovo, Vladivostok and Sevastopol will open no later than in 2023. Our leading museums and theatres will be represented there, and branches of art schools will start working there already next year. I mean, I've never heard anyone speaking about culture in the West, in America or in Britain, talking about museums and theatres being open for the people. He said the demand for a rich cultural environment is very high, primarily in the regions where a great number of talented and committed people are working. I propose greatly expanding assistance to local cultural initiatives, that is, projects dealing with local history, crafts, and the preservation of the historical heritage of our peoples. For example, additional allocations can be made towards this from the Presidential Grants Fund. In addition, we will allocate over 17 billion rubles within the Cultural National Project for the construction and renovation of rural culture clubs, and over 6 billion rubles for supporting cultural centres in Russia's small towns. Passion for a future career and creativity is formed at a young age. In the next 3 years, thanks to the development of children's technology parks, quantoriums and education centres for computer skills, natural sciences and the humanities, around 1 million new spots in extracurricular education programmes will be created. All children must have access. The Sirius Educational Center in Sochi is becoming a true constellation. The plan was for centers supporting gifted children, based on its model, to open in all regions by 2024. But our colleagues said that they can finish this work early, within 2 years. Such proactive efforts deserve praise. And I picked that one out because it shows you that he's, you know, that they are streaming the youth. So all the kids have got access to the education programs, but the gifted kids, they've got a special educational center set up for them so that the brightest kids can really be given all the resources that they need to get somewhere. And he's obviously wants people to learn about their historical heritage. I mean, you compare that to Sweden, where they're just destroying the historical heritage, and what they're doing over here in Britain, where they're showing Negroes amongst the Romans and in all the period pieces on the television. It's completely the opposite of this. What do you think of the cultural and education policies he outlined here, Matt?
This is something that when I read this for the first time, it really stuck out. He connects economic growth, education, and the upbringing of children, the family issues, with cultural traditionalism. This is one of the most nationalist things I've ever heard in my life. And not only that, he connects it to rural development. As he said many times, he knows that so much of the core of Russian identity is in the countryside, is in the old peasantry and everything else. And he's going to put, now that the money is there, he's going to put his money where his mouth is. This is one of the most nationalist things imaginable, because there is a connection between economic growth and development and nationalism, because there has to be a purpose to that economic growth and development. Economic growth for what? And it's to build this sense of identity, this sense of family. And he's no question in my mind, he's saying this, going out of his way to mention this as a way to confront the West, because he knows exactly what the West is doing. He even mentions, you don't have it here, but he mentions monuments. There's no question he's making a reference to things like Charlottesville and taking down all of the monuments in the U.S. and elsewhere. So making these connections, This speech is a serious piece of work. This is a piece of nationalist literature here, making these connections and the very profound point that economic development doesn't exist by itself. It's connected with families. It's connected with the nation. And so this is as much part of the infrastructure as bridges and roads and anything else. It's a tremendous statement. And if you ever wondered why the West, Western elites hate Putin so much, this is it.
Well, I particularly like the way that he's against equality. I mean, that's what he's saying. We don't believe in equality. We will give all the kids educational prospects, and then the very brightest ones, they will get extra special training available to them and an extra special place available to them. If that was in the West, they would be saying, we need to get more black kids at this, and we need exactly. to lower the standards so that everyone can do it. So,
I produced two gifted children, two gifted boys. Who had their own separate education. I went to a gifted high school. I was treated in as a separate. I mean, there was some integration, but not as much as there, you know, was 20 years ago, where there was no such thing as gifted programs in America. That's changed a little bit, but yes, there's no question. So it's a very sensitive area for me. Gifted kids are bored, and when kids are bored, they act out. It's the right thing to do.
Yeah, they need to capitalize on all that intelligence that's there. Well, we spoke about the economy earlier, and next up is the economy. He said, I have something positive to share with you. For the first time ever, our reserves fully cover not only the sovereign debt, which is quite small, but also all the private borrowings. These funds are at work, and investment of the National Welfare Fund generates a budget revenue. The most crucial indicator of a business's efficiency and competitiveness lies in expanding export and entering external markets. The success of our agricultural industry is, of course, a good example of such development. Our agricultural export increased by 19.4% in 2018, reaching $25.8 billion. In 2024, we must reach $45 billion. Incidentally, we are not only one of the largest wheat exporters. Last year, we exported 44 million tons. We have at least one more significant achievement. Thanks to the developments of Russian researchers, we are no longer dependent on other countries for wheat seeds. Experts will confirm how critically important this is. Russia must have the entire range of its own advanced agricultural technology, which must be available not only to large but also to small farms. This is literally a matter of national security and successful competition in the growing food markets. One more thing. I think everybody will agree that our massive natural resources constitute our natural advantage. They need to be used for increasing the production of organic produce. I am instructing the government to create a protected brand for clean products, a brand that will guarantee safety of the technology used and win the reputation of high quality both on the domestic and foreign markets. Trust me, it will be extremely popular abroad. There is hardly anything clean left there. And I thought that was great, that last little bit there, saying that there's hardly anything clean that's left outside of Russia. So they've got the money there, and he's concentrating it on agriculture. You need to be self-sufficient, not just, you know, in your own home as an individual, but countries need to be self-sufficient. Again, that's a core nationalist value, to have a country that is self-sufficient. What do you think about this, Matt?
Oh, this is, again, I can't praise this enough. We connect this to Trump's State of the Union, and there's no contest here. Few things. Tsarist Russia was feeding the world. It was producing more wheat and rye than even the U.S. Today, in the Midwest of the United States, the water is disappearing. It's going to be a desert, and which means that Russia is going to become even more and more strategic over time. The second thing is that the USSR couldn't feed itself. Russia went from the granary of the world to needing food aid from the West. You know, so much for anti-communism, food aid from the West to function. And of course, he's declared war on GMOs, and saying that there's nothing clean left there is a real slap in the face. I think he said a long time ago, there's no food consumed in the West. It's food-like products. And the last thing is he's talking about the customs union here. that there's such a massive demand for Russian products, especially in the high-tech sector and food in the Far East, not in the West. And so, you know, you compare this to Ukraine, which has by force disengaged itself from the Eurasian Union and brought itself into the EU, where it can't compete. Had it stayed with Russia and pointed itself east, their goods are actually in demand there. So now you have a fourth world country losing population versus Russia. It's really heartbreaking, but it shows you that the success of Russia since 2000.
I hadn't actually worked that one out, but yeah, that's what he's referring to, is the genetically modified seeds and crops that are everywhere else. That's why it's a matter of national security that they get their own clean seeds. Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left, Matt, and I would like to get your thoughts on what he says about defence. I mean, he pointed out the INF treaty that America has pulled out from it, and then he pointed out that America is putting all these rocket launchers all around Europe that are pointed at Russia, and Russia will have to provide some form of deterrent because of that. And he makes it very clear that anything that they do is entirely defensive, and they would rather see it rust away than actually be used. So what are your thoughts on the defense capabilities of Russia and what he spoke about defense?
Well, you know, the American press has said headlines, Putin threatens the West. Now, they know they're lying when they say this. Most of the Western media won't even print his speech. They'll have articles telling you what he said, and they're lying through their teeth. They won't say that this is responsive. They won't say that the U.S. is putting nuclear weapons in the Baltics and Poland and Romania, which is not very popular in those countries, by the way. This is deadly serious. And saying that Putin's threatening the West and wants nuclear war, which is headline in USA Today, it shows you that the press is knowingly lying about this and will do whatever it can to support the State Department and the DOD. It's absolutely disgusting. But this is all about Russian sovereignty, and Putin came right out and said, we are a sovereign nation. Russia can't exist without its independence, and he's doing it both militarily and economically.
Yeah, that's the final thing that he said here. He said, he spoke about sovereignty. He said, colleagues, Russia has been and always will be a sovereign and independent state. This is a given. It will either be that or will simply cease to exist. We must clearly understand this. Without sovereignty, Russia cannot be a state. Some countries can do this, but not Russia. And I think what he's referring to there is the New World Order and the EU and everything else that's going on outside of it. We've got a few seconds left, Matt. Do you want to say something about sovereignty here?
That's been the core of everything. His economic policy, his defense policy, his food policy, education policy, the cultural policy. Everything comes down to nationalism and sovereignty and rebuilding a world order that's based on national, ethnic, and religious tradition rather than the needs of large conglomerates. And that's really what it comes down to. That's the foundation of everything.
A very, very, very good speech from Putin this year. Okay, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.